I'll be speaking on the quantitative genetics and trade-offs in improving sorghum as a biofuel feedstock. Now, my first goal here is to convince all of you that sorghum can be an efficient producer of biomass. And this data was actually collected in Ames, Iowa, not the center of sorghum growing for the world. But we can see on the bottom of the x-axis the kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, and on the y-axis we have the yield in dry tons. And what we can see is sweet sorghum outproduces sorghum sudan grass, maize, switchgrass, big blue stem, and reed canary grass over 3 years at all input levels, especially at low input levels. Now, from that biomass, we can divide it up into grain starch, which is currently most of what ethanol is made from currently, stem sugar, which is what Brazil and India use for making ethanol, and eventually cellulose, which will hopefully be able to be used for making biofuel. So here's some motivational questions to think about throughout this talk. First of all, what is the theoretical yield of ethanol per hectare, and how can this be improved, especially in sorghum? So I like to think about it as if the plant produces a fixed amount of photosynthates, where does it store and use these? Well, it stores and uses them for grain sorghum in the grain, in sweet sorghum for the stem sugar, and for biomass or forage sorghums, a lot of it's stored in the stem and leaf biomass, as well as for grain and sweet sorghums. So now, once we figure that out, what's the idiotype of a sorghum plant to be used for a crop residue? Maybe where grain is the primary product, but we want to get additional ethanol out of fermenting the crop residue, and a dedicated biomass feedstock, which grain may not even be a part of. It may just be structural yield. So an important thing to keep in mind that I'm not going to discuss is the technology for digestion and converting these sinks to ethanol, the transportation and proximity to processing facilities, and the inputs needed. But as I showed you, sorghum is a pretty efficient user of inputs. So the study I'm actually going to discuss is a QTL mapping population between sweet sorghum Rio and grain sorghum BTX623 that was created by Dr. Rooney. Now, Rio was selected for high stem sugar, whereas grain sorghum BTX623 was primarily selected for grain yield. For Rio, grain quality was not so important. It was mainly just for planting, whereas with BTX623, we would expect that to be much more important. Rio sweet sorghum is tall, it's high biomass and it tillers, whereas that's sort of the opposite of what you would expect for a grain sorghum, which usually needs to be combine height, has low biomass, and doesn't necessarily tiller, or at least as profusely. The experimental design was 176 F5F6 BTX623 by Rio Rills. And these were evaluated in three locations, College Station in 05 and 2005 and 2006, and in Weslaco, which has a much more southerly latitude. The way we did this is harvesting a meter of each row, separating them into head, stems, and leaves, and then looking at the quality of heads, leaf, and stem through near-infrared spectroscopy. We also pressed the stem to get juice and looked at that both through BRICS and through HPLC, sucrose, fructose, and glucose measurements, but I'm only going to be reporting the BRICS here because it's a little more heritable than the HPLC measurements were. And in the structural composition, I should say, the grain was starch, oil, and protein were measured, as well as fiber, and for the leaf and stem, cellulose, hemicellulose, lignin, and protein were all measured. Oh, let me also point out height, flowering time, and tillering were measured, and sorghum does regrow when you cut it down. So there's been a lot of controversy about, you know, clear-cutting the residue off and leaving the soil bare, but with most sorghums, they're going to regrow, so that's not so much a huge issue. Now, this is some data showing in Weslaco 2005, the average of 2 reps. On the x-axis, I have what each of the highest rill lines for that location, the average highest rill line, were noticed for. For instance, this one right here had the highest BRICS, that rill line. And over here, you know, highest BRICS and leaf yield, high grain yield, high stem cellulose. On the left is the dry metric tons per hectare, and it's broken down into starch, sugar, and cellulose in green. And then above that are things that aren't really necessarily considered to be ethanol products right now, but are byproducts that can be useful. For instance, grain, fiber, protein, and oil can be used as dried distillery grains for feeding animals, and the stem and leaf hemicellulose, lignin, and protein might have uses. But the thing I want you to notice here is BTX623 produces a lot more grain starch, and Rio produces a lot more sugar. which is sort of what we expect. But what we can see that's really important here is it's really the high stem yield line that produces the most sugar, not the high Brix line. Although a lot of people have reported this, I think it's, or similar things, I think it's important to note that it's really the yield rather than the quality that's important in this population for determining total fermentables in the end. Not that quality is not important. But the theoretical ethanol yield, by using these calculations from Wu et al. And NREL and the USDA, show that we could improve theoretical ethanol yield by 17% by just over the population mean by improving composition. We might be able to improve it up to 89% by improving yield alone without changing composition, and as much as 124% by both yield and composition. This clearly argues for focusing on yield first. Now, height is one of the major predictors of yield. Taller plants produce more biomass has more stem juice yields more sugar, and it also yields more cellulose. However, it also tends to yield less grain, especially in high stress areas. So height is a major predictor of the biofuel potential of any sorghum plant. Now I'm going to walk you through this slide. It's rather complex, but what this is the QTL from this study. This first slide is one location, and what I laid out for you here is height, flowering time, tillering, and the stem diameter, which sort of can't be clumped into any one trait. Then we have the yield of the biomass, all the biomass, broken down to grain, stem, leaf, and sugar, the Brix composition, and then the grain composition, starch, fat, protein, fiber, and 1,000 grain rank, in the stem, cellulose, semicellulose, lignin, and protein, and in the leaf, the same thing. Now the height of these QTL is going to be the variation explained, but what I'm not trying to show you here is any particular QTL. I really want to focus on the trade-offs that we see. And that would be where you see a QTL in red for the Rio sweet sorghum parent versus the blue QTL for the grain sorghum parent. So you can see QTL were distributed all over the genome, but the one thing you'll really notice is there's two major regions that really jump out in this Weslaco location, which I forgot to point out was a dry environment. It was a really nice year down there. And we can see that height and flowering time QTL also co-localize with a lot of different trade-offs. For instance, as I mentioned before, there's less grain with these higher height, later flowering time lines, but there's more biomass, more stem, more leaf, and then there's also some changes in composition. Height also leads to a large increase in stem in this location, but not necessarily a decrease in grain. That suggests that there wasn't a trade-off in this location between grain and stem sugar, and net energy was increased by having taller plants at that QTL. However, there was a little bit of a trade-off between lignin and protein in the stem at that location. Now, we can contrast this quite well with College Station in 2005, the same year. However, at flowering, there was a lot of rain, which I think really damaged some of the later flowering plants, as well as a very high midge population. And so the earliest lines in this location didn't have any, hardly no midge damage at all. The very latest lines produced no grain because of midge, and the lines in the middle tended to produce small malformed grains from potentially the midge eating the ovary. But we can see there's a huge trade-off in flowering time, later flowering time in red, with grain yield in blue. However, it still increases biomass in the stem, leaf, and and there's also some other changes in composition. But in general, height and flowering time were the major effectors of trade-offs, but then there's a lot of these QTLs that don't have any trade-offs that could be used for improving overall yield or composition. So in conclusion, by increasing the residue stem sugar or the cellulose in the stem and leaf, we can improve the overall feedstock value without adversely affecting the grain yield. There weren't really any trade-offs with those composition traits. Under non-stress conditions, which would be like the Weslaco location where it was a beautiful year, sugar, leaf, and stem could be nearly doubled by increasing height with only minor effects on grain. However, under stressful conditions, maybe with midge or with water during flowering time, there was a direct trade-off between high biomass, tall late flowering sorghums, and grain sorghums, which were dwarf in early flowering. Now, one of the other major conclusions I drew from this was that if we continue to fix plants maybe for a taller stature and later flowering, These dedicated sorghums, just on the basis of biomass they produce, could be competitive with sugarcane in the locations, not necessarily in Louisiana maybe, but in some other locations, and miscanthus corn or switchgrass. The QTL did not explain all genetic variation and little total variation. QTL studies aren't probably the most effective way to look at trade-offs. So correlations also were valuable in helping to decipher some of this data. The marker-assisted selection, or using marker-assisted selection, would be much less work than phenotyping many of these traits. Collecting all these plants and deadheading the seeds and the leaf and the stem was a fair amount of work, and if there was an easier way, that would really benefit, I think, everybody. And finally, evaluations in hybrids. Sorghums are often grown in hybrid combinations, so all these lines were recombinant inbred lines, probably not necessarily as indicative of field performance as actually testing a hybrid would be. And so with this acknowledgments of many people, both in Texas and in Cornell and other places, that's all I have. Thank you. Questions? Yes, sir.
Do you know if any of your QTLs that are related to flowering or plant height actually correspond to the classical website that Wingate and Harper described?
Do I know if any of the height QTLs I described correspond to ones other people have mentioned? So a fellow student in my lab, Pat Brown, actually gave me a molecular marker for this chromosome 7-1, which is dwarf 3, which has been cloned. I don't know about any of the flowering time QTL. I haven't investigated that extensively. There's another height QTL, which, yes, it also corresponds. Other people have found QTL in that location, and I believe it's sort of controversial whether it's dwarf 2 or dwarf 4, but as far as I know, I mean, maybe Dr. Rooney might be able to. Okay. Other questions? Ming? The red bars. Oh no, the length, the distance this way is the genetic distance. The height would be the percent variation explained. Uh-huh. Right. What I would guess. I mean, it's pretty logical that those two. QTL co-localized because taller plants produce more biomass, so you find QTL in both locations. Does that answer your question? Yes.
You mentioned that you used the near-infrared spectroscopy to measure composition.
Mm-hmm. You want more?
What was the model that was used for that? Was it specifically for this population, or generic
data model? So for the stem and the leaf, those models I developed from this population as well as from an additional diverse suite and grain sorghums that were collected in Texas in the same year. The grain, I developed a NIR model with that and combined it with the results that were reported by Peterson and Hooks et al. 2005 or 2006. Does that answer your question? Sort of? Okay. Yeah. Well, I think the model worked very poorly for predicting lignin in the leaf, for instance. It worked excellent for predicting protein across all three tissues, grain, stem, and leaf. And it worked pretty decently for cellulose, and hemicellulose in the stem was problematic, I think, as well. Moisture was really a real problem, which is sort of surprising, but the measurements for it were done under 150 degrees, I think, and I think the sugar actually decomposed, and that sort of screwed up those measurements, though. Thank you.